Pull up a chair. I want to tell you about an airplane that most people, if you showed them a picture today, would swear was drawn by an artist and not an engineer. Because nothing that flew for a living was ever supposed to look that good. This is Radio Hangar, I'm Taildragger, and this is The Hangar, where we spend a little time every day with the airplanes and the people who made this whole business of flying worth doing. And today we are going to talk about the Lockheed Constellation, the Connie. The most beautiful airliner ever built, and I will fight the man who says otherwise. Now before we climb into the story, let me take care of something. Today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com, aviation challenge coins for every milestone in flight. First solo, private pilot, instrument rating, all the way up. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it. Every coin tells a story. And that's the thing about this business, isn't it? Everything worth doing leaves a mark. Check them out at AviationSoul.com. All right, let's go back. Picture the late 1930s. The airliner of the day is the Douglas DC-3, wonderful airplane. We've talked about the Goonie Bird before, and she earned every kind word anybody ever said about her. But she carried 21 people, she flew low, she flew slow, and she flew right through the weather because she had no choice. Cross the country in a DC-3 and you were making stops, lots of them. You were bouncing along at 10,000 feet with your ears popping, and a coast-to-coast trip meant a day and most of a night, wheels down at Kansas City and Albuquerque and who knows where else. Thunderstorms rocking you the whole way. Somebody looked at that and said, we can do better. And that somebody was a strange, brilliant, half-mad millionaire named Howard Hughes. Now here's where it gets interesting. Hughes owned a big piece of Trans World Airlines, TWA. And in 1939, he walked into Lockheed out in Burbank, California. And he did something almost nobody did back then. He ordered an airplane that didn't exist yet. He told Lockheed what he wanted, and what he wanted was the moon. He wanted an airliner that could carry twice the people of a DC-3, more than twice, and do it above the weather. Pressurized. He wanted it to fly across the entire United States nonstop. Coast to coast, no fuel stops, no bouncing down into Amarillo at 2 in the morning. And he wanted it faster than the fighters the Army was flying at the time. Think about that. He wanted a passenger airplane that could outrun a pursuit ship. And because Hughes was Hughes, the whole thing was done in secret. Lockheed's engineers, a team led by a fellow named Kelly Johnson, the same Kelly Johnson who would later give us the U-2 and the Blackbird, they went to work behind closed doors. This was a black project before we had the phrase. TWA employees weren't even told what they were buying. The design was locked up tight. What came out of Burbank was the model 049 Constellation, and when they rolled her out, grown men stopped talking. Let me paint her for you, because you have to understand what the eye saw every airliner before her, and honestly most of them since, is a tube, a cigar with wings. Straight fuselage, because straight is cheap and straight is easy. The Constellation was not straight. Her fuselage was curved along its whole length, a long, graceful, tapering shape, like a dolphin arcing out of the water, higher at the nose, dipping in the middle, sweeping back up. The story goes that the shape came from following the airflow, and there's truth in that, but the honest truth is it also just looked alive. It looked like it wanted to fly before you ever lit the engines. And then the tail. Not one tail, three. Three vertical fins standing up off the horizontal stabilizer like the fingers of a hand. Now there was a real reason for that, and it's a good one. The Connie was a big airplane, and she needed a lot of tail surface for control, but a single tail tall enough to do the job would have been too tall to fit in the airline hangars of the day, so the engineers split the area across three shorter fins. Practical, clever, but my lord, it was gorgeous. You could spot a constellation from 3 miles out and never mistake her for anything else that ever flew. That triple tail was her signature. She rode up high on long, spindly landing gear, nose in the air, and even sitting still on the ramp, she looked fast under the cowlings. Four Wright R3350 engines, big 18-cylinder radials, 2 rows of 9, and each one of them putting out somewhere north of 2,000 horsepower. When four of those lit off in sequence on a cold morning, first a cough, then a stutter, then that deep chest-rattling round-engine roar, and the smell of avgas and hot oil rolling across the ramp, you knew you were standing next to something serious, that sound. If you've ever stood near a running constellation, you know there's nothing on Earth like four big Wrights at full song. It gets into your ribs, now. The war came before the airlines ever got their airplane, 1942, and the whole country turned to the fight. The Constellation, this beautiful thing Howard Hughes built to pamper passengers across the country, got drafted. The Army Air Forces took the production line and the airplane became the C-69, a military transport hauling men and cargo. the first ones to fly the type in service flew it in olive drab, not airline silver. And there's a wonderful story from those early days. Howard Hughes himself, along with a TWA executive, flew one of the early airplanes across the country, April 1944, Burbank to Washington, D.C. And they did it in under 7 hours. 7 hours coast to coast at a time when the trip took the better part of a day. They painted that one in TWA colors just for the flight, just to make the point, before the Army made them paint it back to green. Hughes wanted the whole world to know what his airplane could do, and the world noticed. When the war ended, the airplane finally got to do the job it was born for. 1945-1946, the Constellation goes to the airlines, TWA first of course, then Pan American, then a long list of others around the world. And she changed everything about what it meant to get on an airplane. Let me put you in a seat, pull up a chair, because I mean it, I want you to feel this. It's 1947. You're boarding a TWA Constellation for the trip from New York to Paris. You walk up the air stair into that curved cabin, and it's quiet in there, quieter than you expected, because the airplane is pressurized. She climbs up above 20,000 feet, over the weather, into the smooth air, and for the first time in the history of the human race, an ordinary person with a ticket is riding across the ocean in comfort, above the clouds and the sunshine, while the storms roll along underneath you like somebody else's problem. The DC-3 flew through the weather. The Connie flew over it. That was the whole revolution right there. Stewardess is bringing you a real meal, room to lean your seat back, that long dolphin fuselage humming along on four rights, and the coast of Ireland sliding up under the wing, right about the time your coffee arrives. She shrank the world. That's not too strong a way to put it. The Constellation and the airplanes that followed her turned the ocean from a five-day boat ride into an overnight flight. She flew the first regular nonstop service across the North Atlantic for the airlines. She flew the long Pacific routes, and Lockheed kept making her better. The airplane grew. They stretched her. They gave her more fuel, more power. The later versions, the Super Constellation, and then the ultimate one, the L Model 1649 Starliner, could fly the polar routes nonstop from the American West Coast clear across the top of the world to Europe, 18-19 hours in the air. On an airplane designed before most of us were born. Now I want to be an honest storyteller with you, because a good hangar tale doesn't just polish the halo. Those Wright 3350 engines were magnificent, and they were also a handful. They ran hot. They ran hard. They were complicated. And in the later years, they had these things called turbo compound units bolted on to squeeze more power out of the exhaust, and that made them even more complicated. The flight engineers who ran them earned every dollar. Pilots who flew the Connie will tell you, with a certain grim affection, that she was the best three-engine airliner ever built, because you spent a fair amount of time flying her on three. An engine fire on a piston airliner over the middle of the Atlantic was a real and serious thing, and the men up front knew it every time they pushed the throttles up for takeoff. There's a reason they respected that airplane. She'd give you the world, but she asked you to pay attention. And here's the part that always gets me. The Constellation was, in a way, the last of her kind at the very moment she was the best of her kind, because right behind her, the jets were coming. The Boeing 707, the Douglas DC-8, and once the pure jets showed up in the late 1950s, smoother, faster, higher, simpler to run, the days of the big piston airliner were numbered. The Connie flew the airlines for a while longer, then got handed down. She hauled freight. She flew for the smaller outfits. Some of them ended up as ground trainers or worse, parked out in the desert with the sun bleaching that beautiful skin, the queen of the sky. And the whole reign lasted maybe 15 years. That's how fast our business moved in those days. Back when Avigaz was cheap and airspace was free, an airplane could go from the most advanced thing in the sky to yesterday's news before its first set of tires wore out. But you can't keep an airplane that good down, because people loved her. They loved her the way you love, something beautiful that you know you'll never see the likes of again. And so all these years later, there are folks who have refused to let the Constellation disappear. There are a handful of them left in the world that still fly, or that people have poured years and fortunes into bringing back. Down in Australia, up in the United States, there are teams of volunteers and restorers, old airline mechanics and young ones learning the trade, who have taken these airplanes apart rivet by rivet and put them back together so that the sound of four big Wrights can still roll across an airshow ramp. And I'll tell you, if you ever get the chance to stand on a flight line when a Constellation starts up, you go. You put down whatever you're doing and you go. You watch that triple tail come around. You feel those engines light in your chest, and you'll understand in about 4 seconds everything I've spent this whole show trying to tell you. She is the sound and the shape of an era when getting on an airplane was an event, when it was elegant, when the whole idea of flying across an ocean above the weather was brand new, and a strange genius in California dreamed it up and drew it with a curve instead of a straight line. The credit for the details today goes to Lockheed's own history of the type, to the accounts left by the TWA crews who flew her, and to the restoration outfits keeping the last of them alive, who share their work so the rest of us can remember. If you want to see her, look up where the flying constellations are appearing this season. There's more on all of it over at radiohanger.com. That's the Connie, the most beautiful thing that ever wore an airline's colors, and don't let anybody tell you different. I'm Tail Dragger. Keep looking up.